Well, hello folks, thank you very much for coming along, especially on such a sunny day. I hear some people went into the Botanic Gardens by mistake, and I was like, I'm not competing with Botanic Gardens, so thank you to those of you who have come back. So you'll probably hear from my accent, I'm not from around these parts. This has been our first trip to Birmingham, and we've enjoyed it very much, although so far all we've really seen has been a bit of a travel lodge and Starbucks, but they were both lovely. I grew up in Belfast, Northern Ireland, and growing up, I've got a younger brother and sister, and my brother always says that in our family, he was the good-looking one, my sister was the one who got the brains, and I was the one who got the morals. And that gives you an idea of the kind of person that I've always been. So I would love to tell you now about the stories of me and my my shopping past, male models and high-speed car chases. That's not my story at all. I'm one of life's good girls. I like things to be neat and tidy. I like things to be within the lines. I don't like mess of any kind. And growing up, that sort of sense of order was very important to me. So one story I would tell is, whenever I first went to infant school, there was a big garden with swings and slides and a sand pit. And I headed straight to the sand pit, chucked the other kids out, cleaned up the sand, the messy sand that they had made. What were they doing? And smoothed the lines till everything was really flat. And then I spent the rest of the day walking around guarding to make sure nobody else went in. As you can imagine, I was very popular at infant school. But that's me. A perfectionist, someone who likes to keep rules, someone who feels that her sense of identity comes from what she does very much. That worked well for me, being a good girl, up until about the age of 13. But when I was 13, a couple of things changed. Nothing that would look really major to other people, but things that felt major to me. So one thing was I became a Christian, but I say Christian quite loosely because I don't think I got the whole gospel at all. I didn't really understand who Jesus was. I kind of understood about God and I understood about sin. I understood that I'd done bad things and I needed to be forgiven. But I didn't understand grace. I didn't understand how Jesus fitted into that. And it seemed to me that God was like a bigger version of me. He was also all about the rules. And he wanted me to keep those rules. He wanted me to be good. And as long as I did that, he would butt into my life and he wouldn't strike me with a thunderbolt, pride of murder, or anything like that. And I would just sort of wave to him on Sundays. And that was how it worked between us. And I was fine with that. So that was one thing that became different for me. My family, they're still not Christians, although I keep praying. And for the first time, I didn't really fit with them anymore, but I hadn't really got the whole picture. Other things that were changing was my body. I was hitting puberty, but I didn't look the way women that I wanted to look like looked. The bits of me that stuck out were the bits of me that were meant to go in. The bits of me that were meant to go in were the bits of me that stuck out. And I just felt like I was a real mess. I was bullied at school, moved to a girls' school, and you can well imagine someone who has all the right answers, and it took me a while to work out other people might have right answers as well, and that didn't go in my favour. So I felt like I was really out of place there too. And we moved house. We stayed with my granny for a wee bit, and my granny was an amazing woman. I'm sure you think your granny's amazing. Your granny is not amazing compared to my granny. She was fantastic, and I was really close to her. But we had to share a bed, and because there wasn't very much space. And so in lots of different ways, it felt to me like this girl who was neat and tidy and well within the corners and fitted in and knew who she was spilling out. I didn't fit in at school. I didn't fit in my family. There was too much of me, and there was too much of me on the inside as well as on the outside. My granddad died as well, and no one could explain to me what happened when you died. You know, my dad said, he's gone to the ground, he's gone to the worms, so it's all cool. And I didn't find that cool then. I still think, gosh, how do I make sense of the whole world? So it all added up to me to a feeling of being a real mess. I felt like I was red wine, spilt on a white carpet. I was just the spilling, horrible weakness, and I wanted to be like that sandpit. I wanted to be like this. I wanted to be hard, and I wanted to be shiny, and I wanted to know where I ended and where I began, and I didn't anymore. I didn't. I was a mess. And it wasn't that I looked in the mirror and I thought, gosh, you put on a lot of weight, or I want to be a model, or I think I'd look better if I was a smaller size. For me, fat was the word that described all of my mess, all the ways that I didn't fit, all of the questions that I have, all the things that were wrong with me, all of the reasons that people bullied me, the reasons that I stuck out, the, you know, what did it mean to be a woman, what happened to you when you died, why wasn't I as the good person that I wanted to be, a million and one questions. For me, they were all summed up by the word fat. And part of it was my body, which was changing and spilling out, but most of it was actually what it was about on the inside. This, who am I? I'm a mess. And I thought, you know, and it wasn't conscious, it was like a discovery, a secret that I stumbled upon. But if I could make my body smaller, if I could shrink my body, then I could shrink all these worries as well. And instead of worrying about a million and one things like who am I, and where do I fit in, where do I belong, who's God, and what happened to my granddad, all I had to worry about was one thing. I just had to worry about losing weight. I just had to be thinner. And I could do that. You know, because when you're 13, you can't control an awful lot, but you can control your body. And it was something I was able to change. It was something I was able to put my stamp on. And so that for me was how it started, gradually cutting down different foods, exercising more, hiding everything, lying about everything, because although I never heard of anorexia at this stage, I didn't want anyone to take it away from me, because that was who I was. That was me. And if you took that away, I felt like you'd be killing me. I felt like it was what gave me life. It was this powerful thing that gave me a sense of control and mastery. And even though I was out of control, I felt like the world was mine and I could do anything. Other people's bodies might break down, but mine didn't. I could overcome my hungers. I could overcome anything. So, it took a while before people spotted that I'd been losing weight, and I covered up and lied about everything, and lied about, you know, breakfast and dinner and eating and all the rest. Eventually we went to the doctor, and the doctor said, you look okay to me, you could probably do a bit more exercise, wouldn't worry about it. And I thought, you're absolutely right, I could do a bit more exercise. So I went and exercised, and I lost my weight. And a couple of months later, I'd lost lots more weight, and we went back to the doctor again, and they said, another week you'll be dead. So things progressed very, very quickly from that initial stage. And I got some help, but this is Northern Ireland in the 1990s, and we hadn't really heard about anorexia. You know, it was not something that happened to normal families. It was not something that happened to a family like ours. There were no issues of weight in my family. My mom has never been on a diet. Nobody in my family has ever been on a diet. My parents didn't do anything wrong. There was no big trauma. It seemed to come out of nowhere, and it didn't happen to families like ours until suddenly it did. And we didn't know how to handle it, and we didn't feel like it was something we could talk about to other people. It felt like a dirty secret, and it felt really shameful. And I got some treatment, but the treatment was really focused on just on my weight. Now that's really important if someone is seriously unwell with anorexia, if they lose a lot of weight. Because when you lose a lot of weight, it doesn't just affect your body, it affects your mind. You can't think straight, you get paranoid, you could have a million and one hours of counselling and therapy, and you wouldn't be able to process it because your brain is just like a tissue or a sponge, it's all crumpled, it's all breaking apart. So it's vital that you gain weight, really, really vital. It has to be a first step. But if it's the only thing that happens, then you end up the way that I did at age 18, which was fixed on the outside, back to normal, healthy weight, seemed to be fine, but all the same issues that I'd had before. In fact, worse, because now I'd put my family through years of just a nightmare. You know, my brother and sister were sidelined. We'd had this terrible thing that came out of nowhere. It was all my fault. So what does a good girl do at that point? Well, I went back to religion, but again, the religion that I had that I, the God that I thought looked an awful lot like me, not all the Bible. And I thought, I'll throw myself into this. So I went to Bible college and trained to be a children's worker. And I worked as a children's worker in London. I got engaged to the gentleman who was just exiting the building with our daughter in a purple shirt. I see you. I didn't know he was going to be a vicar. He was a bombshell on me later, but you know, sounds good. Engaged to be a vicar, going to Bible college, teaching the Bible, seemed to understand it all. And I did get bits of it. I got sin. I just didn't get it all. I really hadn't understood it all for me. It seemed to me that I had to be good, and this is another way of performing. So you can look like an amazing Christian, I think, on the outside, and you can look like you've understood the gospel and not get it, because that's what we look like, that's what I look like. But the college came to an end, and my husband got a job being a vicar in Eastbourne, which is where we're from. And it was then I sort of joined at the dots that that would make me a vicar's wife. And all the vicar's wives I've ever known have been just not just good women, amazing women. You know, they could wear pants outside their trousers. They bake, they're kind to animals and other people. They give blood. They don't shout at their husband. Obviously not that I ever do. They're just amazing women. And I was not like that. I didn't know what a woman looked like, let alone a godly woman. So I had the real fear. And because of that fear, I went back to my old habits. I stopped eating again. Only this time I was a grown up. And this time there wasn't a mum and dad there to force feed me spaghetti. And it's very, very hard. I'm sure you'll know this if you work with people with eating disorders as adults. Very, very hard to force them to get help if they don't want to get it. There were other things. We tried to get help from different people. I went to the doctor when I was at college and said, I have a history of eating disorders. I think this is coming back. What should I do? The doctor said, I'm afraid you're not thin enough to qualify for care. You've got to be more serious. But if you lose more weight, then we can help you. I did do that. I lost an awful lot more weight. By the time I'd lost more weight, I didn't want to get help anymore. And we tried to get lots of counsellors. And everybody thought somebody else was helping. And then we moved to Eastbourne, so we kind of fell through the net. I went through NHS outpatient program, but again, we moved. And I got very, very sick. And it was really grim. It was just grim. My hair fell out, my internal organs started shutting down, my nails turned black. I couldn't think straight, I couldn't walk. I remember getting up to try and go to the loo to weigh myself, and then not making it. And falling on the floor and wetting myself on the floor and just lying there for a couple of hours and thinking, I'm too tired to get up, and then getting up again because I want to go and wet myself in the toilet. And that was the shape of it. It was a horrible, horrible time, horrible place. I was dying, but before I died, somebody else did. My granny. The granny I shared the bed with earlier, I told you about. My best friend. Except she was dead, and she was my best friend, and I was too sick to make it to her funeral. And would have killed my family, would have killed my parents, seeing what I looked like, and other people seeing me, would have been like a skeleton standing in a grave. So I didn't go to the funeral. And that night, I was sitting up, and we were in a cottage in Wales, friends had lent us, and I was looking into the fire, and I had the Bible in front of me. And you know, sometimes you have a moment when you see your life very clearly. It's like you're looking outside of yourself. And that was that moment for me. I thought to myself, what have I done? I'm in this marriage where I want that husband anywhere near me, and where, you know, he's effectively waiting for me to die. I pushed my family away and all the people who have tried to help me. I've tried to make an identity for myself by being good, by being religious, by being thin, and none of that has worked. And here I am, unable to go to the funeral of the person, unable to say goodbye to the person in the world that I love most. And in that moment I cried out to God, but not the headmaster God, not the God that I was trying to impress, the God of the Bible, Jesus, the God that I believe you mean, and the God I think who was crying out to me all of those years, you know, really since I've been very small, But this was the first time that I heard him, because this time I had nothing left. I was just broken. And I said, Lord, if you want me, you can have what's left, the bits and pieces, but there's not a lot there. And then I waited. And I don't know what I was waiting for, bright lights or angels or something, and that didn't happen. But I did feel very calm, and I opened up the Bible, because I've been looking for readings from my granny's funeral around. And I opened up the Bible to the book of Revelation, which is the last book in the Bible. And there's a description there of Jesus, and it says, the hair on his head was white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were like blazing fire. His feet were like bronze glowing in a furnace, and his voice was like the sound of rushing waters. In his right hand he held seven stars, and coming out of his mouth was a sharp double-edged sword. His face was like the sun shining in all of its brilliance. And the guy who's telling us, John, when he sees Jesus, he falls at his feet as though he's dead. And that was how I felt. Because I'd always felt like I was too much for people. I was too intense. I was like double concentrated squash. Spilling everywhere. And, people couldn't handle me. I needed to keep myself in. Here was somebody for the first time who was more intense than I was. Somebody who looked at me and said, Emma, love, you might think you're concentrated. I'm a real thing. I can blow your intensity out of the water. And that was amazing. So I kept turning over the Bible, the pages, and there I read a couple more descriptions of Jesus. And the first one was Jesus like a lion. It says, he is the Lion of Judah. He is roaring, and he's terrible, and he's powerful, and he's beautiful, and there is no one like him on this earth. And he holds everybody, everything in his hands. Everything was made through him. Everything is sustained by him. He is glorious. And again, I always felt like life was a scary thing. And the only thing I could control was my body. Everything else was out of control. Everything else was just too much. But here was a God who held the whole universe in his hands. Here was a God who could be trusted, a God for whom nothing was out of his scope. A lion, roaring and terrible and beautiful and in charge. Someone that I could trust. Someone who I could say, okay, take the control that I've got. And you have it, because you're in control, you can be trusted. And that was one thing. I turned over the page then, and there was another description. So on the one hand, this lion, powerful and just majestic and roaring and incredible. But he's also described as a lamb, a sacrificial lamb, a lamb that is broken for you and for me. And again, it struck me because, being where I was at, really skeletal, I just looked disgusting. People crossed the road to avoid me, and I felt like I was nothing. I felt like I was nothing. I was worth nothing. I'd made nothing of myself, nothing of my life. But here was a God who was that roaring, terrible lion who holds everything in his hands, but willingly became like I was, broken, a lamb who was sacrificed. And the word sacrifice means he was given for us. Because I felt like, think of all those years and what I put my family through, my friends through, and everything else. I had to make it better. I had to try and fix myself. And in a sense, I was trying to do that in my own body. My body was bearing my own sins, the things that I did wrong against God, against other people. Jesus said, no, it's not how it works. I take sin, not just your sin, not just the things you do wrong, but the things that everybody's done wrong, and I pay for them on my body. I do it once and I do it for all, and you don't need to pay for yourself. And you don't wash yourself before you come to me. You come to me for the bath. And I don't want your apologies. I don't want promises you to be better. I don't want you to try and pull your socks up or be a better person. I see you as you are, and I love you as you are, Emma. But I'm not going to leave you like that. And I'm going to lead you out. But I'm not just going to lead you out of that exit. I'm going to lead you out of all of these slaveries. I'm going to lead you out of your sin. And I am your Lord, and I am more beautiful than this eating disorder. And I'd always felt like anorexia was my very best friend. She was the person that made sense to me. She was the one that made life work. When I was doing therapy, they'd say, what reasons do you want to give her up? And I thought, well, I'd like to have better skin, I'd like to have more energy, I'd like to go for a party with my friends, that'd be nice. But the things that she gave me were blew the sort of stuff out of the Lord. The things she gave me were things like, I'm your identity. I give you a sense of control. I make everything work. I make the bad stuff go away. Those are the lies she told me. And only Jesus was more powerful, was more beautiful than that. Only Jesus said, I'm excellent, nobody beside me. I am beautiful. I am the lion. The lion is in charge, but I'm also the lamb who is broken, who comes down, who makes himself just like you, and who brings you out. I'm the God who comes down to the pit wherever you are and meets you from that. And that for me was the point when things changed. And I guess it was like a light or something that went on in my head, but I saw this is who Jesus is, this is what life is all about. But it wasn't an overnight, change in some ways. You know, sometimes you hear about people, you know, they tell their stories, their testimonies about God healing them, and it all happens all of a sudden. And God can do that. And he has in people that I know, and he can do whatever he wants. But my story took a lot longer to work out. So when I got him and I was able to change, it wasn't a case of waking up the next day and then having a fry up with my husband saying, right, everything's fine now. It took years, it has taken, is taking years for me to recover. But it began then. It began with the knowledge that there was someone, a relationship, a person who was leading me out. And a life that was bigger than just regaining weight. A life that was about him. And about grace, that he didn't just die to get me over the starting line as a Christian. He dies for all of the things that I do wrong today as well as yesterday. Because I may not make the same mistakes, and I know recovery in many, many ways, but you know what? That 13-year-old girl who was scared and who was messed up and who was anxious and wanted to be in control, well, you're looking at her today. She's the same person, and she needs to go back to that God, not just once when she became a Christian, but every single day, to go back to the cross and say, Lord, I'm still messed up in a hundred different ways. Will you help me? So in a nutshell, that's my story. Come and ask me some questions. A new voice, I think, would be very good here.